This is episode 8 of the Rhode Island Liberty Report. In this episode, I talk with my guest host, John, about gun control, another marijuana bust, panhandling ordinances, and the ethics of the Rhode Island Secretary of State. So let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. I'm Mike, and in the studio with me today, a special treat, a guest host, John, the Rhode Island Liberty meme master, is here today with us. Eric's on vacation. So, John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good. We've been wanting to get you on for a while now, and it's we finally got around to it, and it's pretty, this will be fun and a good treat. But a little peek behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, some big shoes to fill with Eric being out this week. But I'll do my best.
I think we'll manage. So it's kind of funny. A lot of people don't realize how many, you know, they assume it's like one dude on LibertyRI.com and or LibertyRI Facebook page, especially that's where we do most of our stuff. And then realize there's a handful of us that are posting. So it's a group effort. It's not just a one-man band. But so a couple things this week. We're going to talk about some of the latest issues. Couple things. First one being the big news today, I guess, as we're recording this. Gina announced another gun control initiative. So 2A is going to be a big thing coming up.
Big shock there.
Yeah, right.
Also known as the 1% of the time Jason Knight doesn't agree with Speaker Mattiello.
That's right. Exactly. Good point there. Yeah. But he's the Reform Caucus, and they're going to make big changes. And
Right. Now, well, at least with guns.
Right.
And then on nothing else.
Right. Exactly. It'll be interesting to see their report card at the end of the session this time around.
Maybe he'll dip below 99% agreement with the speaker this time. We'll see.
So a couple of big ones, I guess, a buzz, you know, I don't want to say buzzwords, but a couple of the big things being floated out there. One of them being the Ken Marshall's big trigger lock thing that he tried to propose, which kind of was interesting that they had, was it National Shooting Sports Federation or Federation, I believe, was in opposition to it, which, you know, obvious reason. But there was also a pro-gun control lobby group that was, I had read that was also in opposition to it because it's really already on the books in Rhode Island. You buy a gun, they give you a lock. It's
right.
Yeah. So it's, and I also believe, and I could be wrong on this, I do a little research, but I believe if you go to a police station and say you need a gun lock, they give you one.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You can walk in any police station and ask for it. Yeah. It's something that's already funded, but it's grandstanding. It's, you know, look what I'm doing for the community with somebody else's money.
Exactly. And I don't think there's any coincidence with Ken Marshall being in the race in District 68, which we'll talk a little bit later, that special election that one of our friends is running in, Billy Hunt, I think Ken wants to just get his stamp on some kind of gun legislation because it's going to become an issue on the campaign trail, and I'm sure in the debate that they're going to have. So, you know, he needs to get his stamp.
Yeah, he needs some gun grabber cred.
Exactly. Some gun grabber street cred. Yeah. So, but I think it kind of blew up in his face. I think they were making it mandatory. Were they making it mandatory that you had to have it locked in your home as well? Which,
I know Massachusetts has that.
Yeah.
Law. I don't believe Rhode Island does.
Yeah.
Think about what that does. You're basically rendering a defense firearm useless. There are ways to secure a firearm where you can easily access it in an emergency, and a trigger lock isn't one of them.
No, they have fingerprint reader devices and quick
digital
access
keypads.
Exactly. Quick access devices. And I find it funny too, because one of the big arguments from the left on gun control is we don't want to render you defensive. We're not going to take all your guns, but yet you're making it mandatory for me to, you know, lock the tool that I use to defend myself up in my home.
You know? Right. You can't carry it with you. Right. Can't be available for your defense when you're in the home.
Right.
Pretty much anything that makes the firearm useful for you in an emergency situation is not okay. I fully expect that they're going to have us all fill our guns with cement at some point and just tell us to use them as hammers.
Plug the barrel. Yeah.
Yep. Fill it. And swing your gun.
it's absolutely ridiculous. And someone who speaking for myself that was in a profession where you used a firearm, access to your firearm is pretty critical, right?
Well, in terms of timing, it can come down to if you're carrying and you don't have one in the chamber, right. Just the time it takes you to put one in the chamber is going to make the difference over whether you're going to be able to defend yourself or not. So certainly having to fumble for keys for a trigger lock or remember a combination for a trigger lock, as opposed to, there are solutions that the market has provided for this, where you can both keep your firearm safe and also keep it available.
Right.
That's what I use. And when I got my firearms, the first thing I did, when I put them in place in the safe was to tell the kids, here's where the guns are. If you're curious about them, ask me now, I'll show them to you. You can, just curiosity killed the cat. If the kids don't have that curiosity and you satisfy it and you teach them about safety, they're not going to go off and try to find the guns when you're not around.
That's an excellent point, because education is the biggest, one of the biggest, in my family, the biggest things I promote, right? So safety and knowledge and knowing what these things are. So they're not mysterious. They're not, the ideas behind them are not driven by TV or movies or anything like that. Much of that we see on the left, they have no clue about firearms, because they don't use them. They're not into it, quote unquote. So they get all their information from movies or from just bad sources. But if you educate people properly, they understand what it is and the potential for it. I find that they never push for education programs. It's always a ban, a prohibition solution. It's never, let's have health class in school, part of the curriculum, gun safety, I just find that strange. Although I'm trying to think back when I was in high school, if we did anything on gun safety. I don't recall. I took hunter safety when I was a kid, but once I became of age, but I can't think of anything back then. But back in the day, schools had rifle teams, right? They had, it was a sport, where now it's largely left to, gun clubs or Boy Scouts, maybe, I guess. But
the reason why the left tends to stay away from education is because education is merit based. So your ideas have to make sense in order for it to pass muster in education. Because they're emotionally driven and not logic driven, these things have to be forced upon people. They have to be mandatory because they're not good ideas.
Right.
If you sat in a classroom and you picked apart how someone was teaching you to be safe with a firearm and it didn't make sense, it wouldn't be effective. So it comes as no surprise that they're not interested in the reality of a firearm, which is that they exist and that they're dangerous, and that, if you teach your kids about them, then you're going to lower that risk.
Yep.
Rather than saying my child's not allowed to watch TV with guns in it, my child's not allowed to play with toy guns. And ultimately that's the kid that's going to end up so curious about firearms that they're going to go, they're at a friend's house and there's a gun safe and, they're the ones that are, peeking around the corner at it, wondering what's in it. That's just not the way you need to handle it. You can't deny the existence of these things. They're here. And the fact that criminals have them means that the rest of us are going to have them.
Yep. No, excellent points. And along with that, part of owning a firearm is being proficient with it. So, the other piece of legislation that was supposed to come out this week, though I was postponed because of the weather, was the tax, right? They want to put a 10% tax on firearms and ammunition. So now all they do is, one, they make buying a gun more expensive, but they also make the ammunition that goes with it more expensive. And when you go to the range, it's funny. You see a lot of times you'll see they do they arrest somebody and they talk about the hoard of ammunition this guy had or whatnot.
Right.
Well, if you're a shooter and you understand what it is, you buy your ammunition in bulk because one, it's cheaper, and two, when you go to the range to shoot, you shoot a lot, right?
Right.
So you practice. I mean that's what.
Or maybe you buy a lot at one time just in case some politicians decide to put a 10% tax on it.
Right. Right.
That 10%, by the way, is in addition to the 7% sales tax.
That's right.
That's a 17% tax on ammo and guns.
Yes. And Gina, the governor, wants to use this to help fund her $10 billion right. budget.
Well, hopefully 17% will be enough to stop murder.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'll stop. Yeah, it's unreal. Yeah, I didn't read whether or not this counts towards, how they enforce this on, online sales. You know, if you buy, on from a website or something like that and have it shipped to you. I'm not sure. I didn't look into that part of it, but I just think it's ridiculous. If you're making it more expensive to people to be proficient with their firearms, and therefore making it less safe, more dangerous. It's actually it's a regressive thing for
you're disproportionately affecting poor people.
That's true as well.
People that don't have taxpayers funding their armed bodyguards throughout the day.
Right.
Apparently don't have a right to be safe. No. To stand there surrounded by police officers with firearms and say, we're going to enact these policies that will disproportionately affect poor people is pathetic.
Yeah. You would think it's criminal, right?
It sounds it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're using force of government to make it so you are now unable to protect yourself.
Right.
Like it's morally reprehensible if you think of it that way, right?
And protect yourselves from the people this legislation doesn't impact whatsoever.
No, because
nobody refrained from robbing a bank because of a 17% tax.
Right. Yeah, no, it's absolutely ridiculous. Last one I wanted to hit on real quick was the Senator Coyne proposed a ban on 3D printed guns, which I guess were the three big ones this way. I mean, there's a ton of them: assault weapons ban, magazine capacity, all that other stuff. But that was another big one, right? And I think you had mentioned it on one of the threads on the Facebook page was the genie is already out of the bottle on this.
Absolutely, you're not.
So there's so much. Again, it's ignorance, right? They just don't understand the technology, so they don't. You know, the idea of a 3D printed gun it's almost a joke. It kind of goes along the lines of bump stocks, right? It's a novelty. It's
right now it's in its infancy. It's not very useful.
Nope.
But the idea of it is rebellion.
Yeah.
And so let's go with it. If you're afraid that someone's going to walk into a venue with a plastic gun, it's not going to happen. A plastic gun without a metal bullet is a plastic hammer.
Right.
So there's no truth to the their claims that a plastic gun allows somebody to access, a secure area without being detected by a metal detector. That's just not true.
Right. Right. And the other thing is it's unenforceable. How are they going to enforce this thing? You know, it's not possible. You know,
which is why they're afraid of it.
Right. I have my own 3D printer, right? I have one in the house, and even if I don't store the files on my own computer, it's a Google search away. So if for whatever reason I was decide to go crazy and decide to do something, harmful, and I download the plans, I print it out, and I go, what are they going to monitor my 3D printer? Like, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Right. And at that point, it's information. It's free speech.
Yeah, well, that's the other issue, right? It's not just gun control. It's about free speech. It's about controlling information. So
and you can build a real gun in your basement if you really wanted to.
And that's the other thing. I think I made a point in one of our posts that look, 3D printers are super cheap now, easy. And that's the other reason why it's plastic, right? Because it's a 3D printer. That's what it uses. It uses plastic filament. So therefore, that's why they're made of plastic. That being said, metal 3D printing is now, it's progressing as well. That's going to become a thing within the next, and I hate to predict how long, but it's moving along. Technology moves quickly. So it could be, another 3, 4, maybe 5 years before metal 3D printers are at the price of what plastic 3D printers are. And now you've got a whole nother, now that you're talking a different thing, but not only that, you've got, you know, home CNC machines, even just basic hand tools with jigs and things like that you can buy. Like, they just don't, again, they don't understand the technology. And the other side of it, and I made this point on Facebook, was that they're scared, right? They're scared of the technology. They don't understand the technology, but they do realize they're losing control of the people with access to this information.
Right.
And it scares them.
Well, they created it. They created the 3D printed gun through trying to take civilian guns. It probably wouldn't exist if, you know, someone probably wouldn't have thought to 3D print a gun if they felt like their access to guns was ample.
That's a good point.
And the reason why they're afraid of the 3D printed gun is because they can't control it. So the fact that you can't control it scares you. So you're trying to control it, but you can't control it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's more nonsense. Feel good. Well, look what I did. I tried to, of course, people shouldn't be allowed to print their own guns. I made a law. Look what I did. You didn't do anything.
Right. Yeah. That's an excellent point. You know, just kind of on a little bit of a side tangent, just on the technology thing, as technology advances, it's rendering government obsolete in a lot of situations, right? You start looking at like things like cryptocurrencies and again, this is all stuff in its infancy. So there's, of course, a lot of people criticizing it and, but it will get better. You know, these things will get better. Not just cryptocurrency, blockchain in general. When you start looking at using blockchain for like titles and deeds for property, voting systems, you know, all this other type of stuff, it starts really, you know, rendering government obsolete in a lot of areas. And
even more obsolete than it already is.
Right. You know, you look at, I read an article quite a while back, and I might have talked about this on a past podcast, and we're definitely getting on a tangent here, but like self-driving cars. What happens when self-driving cars become a thing? You know, there goes away, you know, speeding tickets, no more revenue, like DUIs go away. All this, you know, traffic violations, all this other stuff now becomes.
Right. They'll have to find another quote unquote source of revenue.
Right.
Yep. Maybe they'll start enforcing permits for yard sales or things like that, where they can make up that revenue. Cause it's not about safety. It's about the money. It's about the money stream.
Oh, exactly. So the other, we'll call this one a day. This, you know, we'll settle, stop on this issue. But the other thing that came out was this, the panhandling issue, which kind of seems to come back every year.
Yep.
It's another thing.
People feel uncomfortable.
It's
sitting at a traffic light.
Right. You know, essentially making it, a fine if you are to give somebody money while sitting at an intersection, basically, right?
Yes.
Is that
the way it's proposed? It is a $100 fine, which increases with each infraction. But the first infraction is a $100 fine for passing something out your window, from a lane of travel. Unless you get a permit. If you get a permit to do this, so if you're collecting money for the VFW or the fire department, the police department, you apply for a permit, and then it's completely safe to pass something out your window.
Right. So one of the things they're using to promote this is it's a safety issue, right? So by getting a permit, all of a sudden the activity is rendered safe. As long as you got that piece of paper from the government, now you're safe. Mm-hmm. Nobody will run you over. No more problems.
This is what I hear about permits,
right?
That they automatically make things safer. So it stands to reason that you would put that in there.
Right. Now it has nothing to do with you having to pay for the permit. I'm sure there's a cost.
No, of course not. It's all safety. But let's call it what it is. You're punishing people for being compassionate.
Right.
When that's ridiculous. Yeah. It's if someone, a person who's homeless has a right to ask people for money. Now, it might make you uncomfortable.
Yep.
You might not like it. I've sat at a light before and felt uncomfortable when someone was hovering around my vehicle. They were on the sidewalk. I think it was Ron Paul that said, we don't have free speech to talk about the weather. We have free speech to say things that might make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
and asking for money is one of them. I don't know what the motive is behind this, because it was four Democrats that proposed this legislation. And from what I hear, everything they do is to benefit the poor.
Supposedly.
So I just don't see where this fits in with their whole, you know, help the poor theme.
Right.
This seems like...
Well, I'm wondering if it's because they want to use government to take care of people and make people even more dependent on the government.
Yep, now, there's a thought.
They've removed a potential revenue stream for people. And
right. They'll show up at the at the shelter or it's somewhere where we can count them and, you know, ask them for their papers.
Right. Now, on the flip side of this, on the right, typically you hear, well, these pay, maybe on the left as well, since they love taxes too. You'll hear, oh, well, these people are making hundreds of thousands of dollars and they're not paying any taxes on it and all that stuff. And to that, I say, good for them.
They're voluntarily asking people for money. They're not taking it from them. Well, and a lot of times when they propose legislation for things, you have the surface level, which is often where the Democrats in Rhode Island tend to operate, is the surface level of an issue, because they're appealing to your emotion. So if you look at the unintended consequences of this, if you make it now with this version, they're going after the driver rather than the homeless person.
Right.
In past versions, they went after the homeless person for it. And there's some First Amendment issues there with that. But ultimately what you're doing, the unintended consequences of this are that you're giving someone a choice between either running afoul of the law because they're panhandling or running afoul of the law because they burglarized a home. Now, are you going to stand out in broad daylight and do something that's illegal, or if you're desperate, or are you going to take the option where maybe you can sneak and do it and not get, so you're essentially giving people, now the other choice is obviously go get a job, but that's all well and good. You can say that. Those aren't the only choices in life.
Right.
Some people don't make that choice. And if we're going to create the unintended consequences of maybe someone chooses to rob somebody rather than panhandle, I'd much rather have them ask me for money. And a lot of times I'll go grab food for them. There's nothing wrong with that. We need to help each other.
No,
it's just a reality.
And you bring up a good point, right? There's market-based solutions to this, right? Again, we all believe, as libertarians, we believe in markets. You don't think people should be panhandling? Don't support the activity, right? Just don't give them money, Or if you feel that's a bad decision because you think, they're going to use it, they use it for drugs or whatever they'll use it for, do like what you just said. Go buy a couple burgers and give them some food, or do something people need, right? And help them that way. I don't think anybody's going to turn down food. And if they do, that's their problem.
Or you don't have to help them at all.
There's nothing you don't.
Saying that that you have to. What it boils down to is somebody had a feeling. They felt uncomfortable, so now they want to regulate that. They don't want to feel uncomfortable. You and I can choose to give the money or not give the money.
Yep.
They can choose not to give the money, but that's not good enough. They want to make sure that we're not giving the money so that they don't have to deal with that uncomfortable feeling at the light every day.
And that's, I firmly believe that's exactly what it is. It's this, either they're uncomfortable or they're somehow bigoted towards these what they believe are unsightly people, right? Or, there's some kind of, feeling that they get from this, that they think government, imposing government force on it will solve the situation and make them feel happy again.
Well, because a lot of their minds, they're thinking this is either the person who's walking under the bridge and getting in the Mercedes, or they're spending it on drugs and alcohol.
Right.
No one can actually be hungry.
Right. Yeah. There's no middle ground. They go one extreme from, one extreme to the other. Right. There's where the vast majority of people are in the middle, right? It's
exactly. Yeah.
On the situation.
I can't even imagine having to stand at a traffic light and beg for money.
Yeah.
And it's, sometimes maybe drug prohibition put them there.
Right.
That's
another example, right? What is the root cause of the situation, right? It's yeah. Ugh. Speaking of drug prohibition. So our next topic, we saw an article today in Tiverton. Was it Tiverton?
It was Tiverton.
Tiverton, yep. Weed bust. And they busted some teenager, 18-year-old kid, for possession of weed and essentially ruined someone's life.
Yep.
Over a plant.
Yep. They found him with 2 pounds, $2,000.
Yep.
So that was good for them. They were able to take that money and they'll probably get to keep it.
Yeah.
Whether or not he's convicted. Cops know what public opinion is now about marijuana.
Right.
It's not a secret. Anytime you see them post a pot bust anymore, it's overwhelmingly negative. Stop wasting the resources on this, guys. And you might see 10% of the people supporting it.
Right.
Just because they're used to it.
Yeah, they've been indoctrinated, right? They're still, you know, hooked on the reefer madness kind of thing. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. And you're exactly right when you read it's almost comical if it wasn't so sad,
right?
For the person that they've screwed over, what people are saying, like, leave them alone. You know, like, who is this person hurt? You know, all that type of stuff. It's absolutely ridiculous. Like I said, the 18-year-old completely. Now, I guess people can argue, well, it is illegal. He made the choice and all this other stuff. But yeah, the choice he made is ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous that there's a prohibition against it.
You know? Right.
So it's, and again, it's a market response. You made something illegal, hard to get. So people are providing something to the community, you know, to their, you know, customer essentially,
right,
that it is, for all intents and purposes, harmless.
Well, and when you hear people that are cleaving to the drug war, a lot of times they will use that, well, he made a choice. The fact that he made a choice changes nothing. Mm. You can make a choice, and the circumstances of the law that's being enforced can still be wrong. You can walk towards gunfire, and if you get murdered, you made a choice, and murder is still wrong.
Right.
He made a choice to grow plants. They caught him. Growing plants is still not wrong, and kicking in someone's door because they have plants is still wrong. Nothing changed because he made that choice.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we see this again, having done Liberty RI for several years now. Well, it's against the law. Well, there are a lot of laws that were really, but slavery was legal. Jim Crow laws were legal. You know, there's a lot of being illegal does not mean it's immoral. You know, legality does not equate to morality. It's, you know, there are a lot of laws that were immoral.
Well, definitely not moral just because it's legal. I would say if you had to base it just on the fact that it was illegal or legal, I would say it was more likely to be immoral if it were legal. When you look at the kind of things the government is up to, it's completely legal to do immoral things as long as you work for the government, and completely illegal to do completely moral things like grow plants in your house. And, you know, you'll see, well, you know, if he just had half a pound, that might've been okay. Well, he had 2 pounds. That's excessive. Who cares?
Right.
I've never had 2 pounds of weed.
Yeah.
But whatever he did, good for him.
Right.
Who cares if he has 200 pounds of a plant?
Right.
It's not your business if he had this. And, you know, a lot of the people that are still hanging on to the drug war, they tend to be on the right. They always talk about how college kids don't, you know, they don't work and they don't take responsibility and they don't. Well, this kid set up a grow operation, or in the very least, a distribution operation, where he was making some money doing, in my opinion, something completely honest. And that was engaging in voluntary transactions. He's not a criminal.
And where was he spending his money? Probably locally, right? He was taking his money, going to the diner around the corner and going to, you know, out to the movies and, you know.
Right. So we should mention that also in the article, it stated that he had Xanax.
Right.
But same principle applies. He's not forcing Xanax down anyone's throat. If someone wants to buy Xanax, then that's, you know,
their choice.
Yeah. Yes, it's illegal.
Yeah.
And no, it's not wrong to sell something to someone who wants it.
Yeah.
Ever.
No. Yeah, it's absolutely. Now, I find it interesting too on the, and you hit on this a little bit with the seizing of the money, you know, with legalization, we'll say legalization right around the corner, whether we agree with it or not, and what it evolves into, what it comes out the other side as, it's bound to happen sooner or later. How is that going to affect police departments' budgets, right? The federal grants that they get for the drug war and all this other stuff starts to go away, right? So that, you know, that's a big motivator. And I'm sure we've talked about this before in the podcast, but that's a big motivation for police chiefs and all these other bureaucrats to be against that side of it, right?
Right. They have skin in the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So now they've got to cut back on their toys and their all this stuff. And
then easy probable cause.
Right.
So many people, whether or not it's legal, a lot of people are cannabis consumers. Yeah. And for a long time, the odor of cannabis was probable cause for a search. So whether or not the police actually thought marijuana was dangerous, they knew it was an easy probable cause requirement we're pulling over a car with some young kids in it. Chances are they're going to have some weed and we're going to be able to toss the car and then, you know, go on from there.
Yeah.
Once it's no longer probable cause, they're not going to be able to go in and steal $2,000 from somebody and tie it up and end up, you know, having that as part of their budget, which it sounds like that doesn't happen because it's so ridiculous. It happens.
Right. And something else I just thought of while you were talking was for the money trail, at the very least, they mess with somebody right there is, depending on the quantity in Rhode Island, because there's partial decriminalization, you know, there's a fine. So there's money revenue generated there. If it's a little bit worse, there's court costs and there's attorney fees. And there's like, so now you start ratcheting up all this other economic, you know, quote unquote economic activity that funds the machine or lawyers or, you know, whoever that benefits from this. You know, that'd be an interesting thing to look at, how many lawyers are against.
Well, that, and you know, that might benefit them, but I mean, people spending money on court costs and fees and fines and,
well, there's broken windows.
There's broken windows all over the place in that theory. I mean, it's just, it's not helping anybody, but then the guy that gets to sit in the courthouse 8 hours a day and collect a paycheck.
Yeah.
It's not helping anybody.
Yeah. You know, never mind all the fact that if you just took this segment of, you know, criminal prosecution out of the picture and folk, you know, we always hear about the backlog, right? And the overcrowding in prisons and all that other stuff. Now you've just removed that from the system.
Right.
The efficiency of actually, you know, prosecuting people that have actually harmed people,
right?
Harmed other
the people that belong there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's often said that libertarians don't believe in rules.
Right.
If you hurt people, you belong in a cage.
That's right.
You don't belong in a cage if you grow a plant.
Yeah.
And to say that we don't have room for pedophiles because we arrested this 18-year-old kid because he had 2 pounds of a plant. Right. Your priorities are not in order.
I don't know if you listen. Do you ever listen to Dave Smith podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. So once, he's a comic, libertarian comic. And he does a podcast. He has an analogy where he says, if I can't lock someone in a cage for it, the government shouldn't be able to lock someone in a cage for it. So for example, if I'm walking down the street and I see someone smoking a joint, is it okay for me to go lock them in a cage in my basement? You know, no, that's nobody would ever agree with that. Now, if you see somebody raping someone or, you know, murdering somebody and you lock them in a cage, you would be
justified
in doing that. Right. So I thought that's a good way of, you know, looking at things. And I probably butchered the way he says it because he's pretty eloquent and and says things, you know, pretty succinctly. But
the thought I had about this kid, 18 years old. And like you said, they ruined his life. But this, what's going to end up happening to him is the same, one of the arguments that we use against the drug war, in that they've determined that this kid did something wrong, so they're going to give him a criminal record. And when he gets out of jail, the criminal record is going to make it difficult for him to find a job. Mm. So what do you think he's going to do to make money?
Right.
He's probably going to sell weed.
Yeah.
Which they're hoping for, because then they get to steal more of his money and throw him back in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. And the other side of it too is again, well, I guess just continuing on what you said, the guy's probably got another 60, 70 years ahead of him, you know? Yeah. And now is he going to become dependent on the government too, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's another problem, right? Now he's, because he can't get a job.
Well, what's going to be on his record is drug trafficking. Yeah. An employer doesn't know what drug you traffic. They're going to, you know, maybe it was fentanyl. Maybe it was, you know, that employer is going to draw their own conclusions. And then maybe you end up like one of these people that are panhandling, and the government isn't allowing them to accept money from people. You're creating these problems, and then you're tying people's hands to be able to solve them.
Yeah.
With this kid, you're going to tie his hands to be able to turn his life around. If you're claiming that he's doing wrong, you're not doing the things that are going to help him not do wrong. You're not rehabilitating him.
You just reminded me of something. I thought about this back years ago when the economy crashed, and people were out of work. Right. And I was thinking back to the Depression, and, you know, stories you read, things you hear about what people did to get by, right? They did odds and ends, odd jobs. They, you know, they'd walk around neighborhoods. Hey, do you need your shutters fixed? Do you need, you know, the house painted? Do you need, you know, all this? They'd go to more affluent areas and, yep, and do odds and ends and all this other stuff. How the fact that nowadays the government's kind of, they've essentially rendered that impossible, because you need a going back to things like permits, yep, and, you know, these OSHA requirements and all this other nonsense, where you've made it impossible for someone to do that. So now they've become reliant on whatever the government will provide, right, them. And even to the point of, if somebody wants to go get their own food from the water, they have to go get a license from the government, right, in order to throw a line with a hook into the ocean so they can get fish so they can feed themselves.
Right. Even though it's been enumerated.
Right.
In the Rhode Island Constitution. It's in the Rhode Island
Constitution,
yeah, and they're still, yeah, you know.
Like it when you start, you know, and a lot of this comes from me spending time in my own head and thinking about these things, but what the obstacles they put into place that allow people to be independent and self-sufficient, it's, and you start like kind of ticking those blocks, you're like, that it's insane.
Yeah. They're building the wall.
Right. So another wall. Moving along. This week, again, we mentioned earlier in the podcast, a friend of ours, Billy, running for state rep in District 68, a libertarian, who I would consider Bill a moderate libertarian. Yeah. He's, you know, he's not an anarchist. He's not a, you know, like, he's a moderate libertarian.
Right.
And another thing people don't understand when they say libertarian, just like Republican or Democrat, there's a spectrum, right, of people. You know, you've got different levels where people are willing to go, and it's a reality, right? So not every libertarian, although we all, I would say, believe in the same basic principle of, you know, non-aggression and, right, property rights, libertarians vary in their degree that they're willing to go.
Right. They might disagree on what they consider aggression.
Exactly. And, you know, often you'll see, like, say a minarchist will agree that, fire departments, police, roads, basic services are acceptable uses. And, you know, but I do think the funny thing is those things don't necessarily need to be funded through taxation, right?
Right.
They, you know, libertarians are thinkers, and they say, can we do this, you know, still provide this service in a different way?
Right.
Well, through a different mechanism, right? So, yeah, whether it's a lottery, donations, fees, you know, again, like tolls is a good example. Libertarians aren't against tolls.
Right.
It's a way to fund roads.
We're against tolls in addition to taxation.
Taxes that have already been stolen from us that were not used to keep up the infrastructure. Now they're going to start stealing money in different ways because right. they blew the money on other stuff. Yeah. One of the other candidates running in this race, June Speakman, who is a progressive Democrat, has raised a ton of money. She went from essentially like just under $400 at the opening of or the start of the election to well over $24,000, almost $25,000, about 5 or 6 weeks later. You know, so the progressive machine and the Democratic machine in Rhode Island did her a solid.
Right.
You know, generating her money for her, you know, and then it's funny, she filed her paperwork, I forget the exact date, but say it was paperwork was due on a Monday. Her fundraiser was that next Tuesday, you know, and I'm just using that as an example. It's not the solid date there, but, yep. You know, so her next filing, you know, we don't know what she's raised, you know, it could have been right. another 10 grand, you know, easily. Well, they're having another fundraiser coming up just before the election because she needs more money for her campaign, apparently. And this one is being hosted by Governor Gina Raimondo, the Secretary of State, Nelly Gorbea, and the Democratic Women's Caucus in Rhode Island. And, of course, the fundraiser is in Providence, and it's, I think, anywhere from $50 to $500 tickets I saw on their website, and the issue came up, is it the Secretary of State being the chief elections officer for the state of Rhode Island, is it ethical for her to be sponsoring a fundraiser for someone running in an active election, you know, a special election? Now, I'm not saying legal.
Right.
Because it's legal.
It's legal.
But is it ethical, you know?
No, I think it's clearly not ethical.
No.
You know, the defense of that has been, well, you know, the Secretary of State doesn't really handle elections. It's the Board of Elections that's really responsible. And you'll see Board of Elections people that work for the Board of Canvassers in different towns. They're very careful to remain unbiased,
right.
At all times. You know, not always in their personal life, but certainly when they're acting in official capacity, they're not supporting any one candidate. That's not to say they can't, but they realize that it doesn't look good.
Right. And you know, another thing I'd seen, so Bill had posted a poll on his page just asking the question, what do you think? And of course, June's supporters came out in strength and in force and no pun intended. And basically we're saying, well, what about when she runs for reelection and she's in effect monitoring her own reelection?
Good point.
As if that's justification for it being okay.
Right.
And we think that would be acceptable as well.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. Thank you.
Yeah. That's a bad idea as well.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. It's just this logic, right? Well, they're so stuck in the system. They think the system's just and moral and noble.
Well, to respond to this idea that the Secretary of State is not in charge of elections and to say that it's in fact just the Board of Elections, that why every time the question comes up of are our elections fair, they parade out the Secretary of State to assure us that elections are fair. So when it benefits them, she is the chief right. elections officer. When it doesn't benefit them, she's not really the
chief. She's not involved.
No, she's not.
Yeah.
Another thing, just beyond the whole conflict of interest that's obviously there, I thought June Speakman was a progressive.
Well, that's the other interesting part of this, right? She's got some pretty entrenched establishment backers.
Well, if Gina Raimondo is inviting people to come to your fundraiser, one would think the same money that you're trying to get out of politics is going to be donating to you. Now, I don't know, you know, how much money she's trying to get out of politics or if she's just trying to do it for other people, but she's not showing me that she's trying to get money out of politics, and she's rubbing elbows with the very people the progressives are claiming are the enemy to them.
Right.
They're trying to take over the Democrat Party. They're trying to push it in a direction that they want, and they're acting as though they're rebelling against people like the governor, when in actuality, this is who is funding their campaign.
Yeah.
And I think some progressives might like Gina.
Especially after her last State of the State address, which we talked about.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and yeah, she's definitely pandering to them. You know, they might like her, but let's just look at, you know, some of the things she's done. Her attack on the medical marijuana community when she was trying to balance her budget on the backs of sick people.
Right.
Plant tags for medical marijuana patients that were growing their own plants. That's not compassionate. That's not, as far as I was concerned, progressives were supposed to be for medical marijuana and for helping poor people. If you're growing your own cannabis, it's probably because you can't afford to pay the dispensary prices. So once again, we have this regressive right. policy.
The government stepping in, making it hard for you to be self-sufficient and right. causing you to rely on them.
And if these progressives were standing on principle, they wouldn't be able to go to a fundraiser being held by Gina Raimondo. No. It's all about the money.
Right.
And so they're demonstrating why money corrupts politics. And if you're serious about getting money out of politics, the only way to do that is to get the government out of the economy. You're never going to create a regulation or a policy that's going to stop things like the Secretary of State overseeing the elections that she runs in, or throwing a fundraiser for somebody in an election that she's running in. You can't get rid of these things. They're just inherent in the system. But what you can do is devalue the representative seat in the General Assembly, that if they're worth bribing, they will be bribed. If they can't rig the game for corporations, corporations are going to say, I'm not giving you any money. What can you do for me?
That's it, right. Exactly right.
So that's the solution.
Yep.
All they're doing are creating situations where they're actually increasing the value to bribe a state representative, not decreasing it.
Yeah. And something else too, all these restrictions on campaign finance that they've put in place, they've put these restrictions in place, you know, well after their, you know, apparatus, their machine was built. You know, so they've already got their networks and their, you know, their funding mechanisms all in place.
Lawyers.
The lawyers and everything. And it was interesting, because I'm a nerd and I'm looking at campaign finance reports, you know, looking at these, you know, who her, just from the ones that she's released, who her sponsors were. And then of course you pull the corrupt Loft and Longo's reports, and then you look at the overlap. Not all the same people, but there's definitely similar people, especially the large backers, the people that are maxing out on their $1,000 donations per year. Yep. You know, they're just, the money just rolls, and it's amazing. And I find it, again, okay, so you raise that initial fund, right? And then you go and you have another fundraiser for your primary. Then after the primary, you're having another fundraiser. You know, how much money do you need to run in a local district of about roughly, I think, 10,000 voters, registered voters, to buy your seat? Like how much is it to buy that seat? And I'm kind of stealing this from Bill as I watched his live stream this morning. But it's insane how much, you know, or maybe they're just really bad with money and they just blow it and they don't spend it well and they need so much of it, which I guess would be a whole nother problem.
We know they're bad with money. That's been confirmed.
So it's absolutely.
Now, doesn't this whole thing with the Secretary of State overseeing an election and throwing a fundraiser for a candidate, doesn't this strike you as something that the progressives would go after?
You would think, right?
Like, it involves them, so they're not, but. This sounds like something I would see Alexandria Cortez talking about, saying this is absolutely unacceptable, it's corrupt, and it needs to change. But because they're involved,
it's all okay.
Let the mental gymnastics begin. It's just
right. You know, Well, and you see it in the comments, the hoops they would jump through to justify it and say it's okay and this is why and all this other nonsense. And, you know, but again, if it's a, you know, either a Republican or whoever their opposition is running, then all of a sudden it's, you know, no, there's too much money in politics and there's, you know, there's all this other stuff, right?
Right.
You'd mentioned Cortez. I watched that video not long ago. I don't know if you saw the video of her with her hypothetical criminal activity, talking about, you know, lobbyists funding candidates and all this other stuff.
Yes, I did see
so
that.
It was probably last week.
Well, we have another example for her to use.
What's that?
Secretary of State fundraiser.
Yeah. And you know, you look at how much money she's raised. She's made two elections, right? And she's raised over $1 million, if I remember right. I looked on followthemoney.org. And, you know, it's just, again, and of course, one of her donors, June Speakman. Yeah. I don't think it was a lot, but June's given a lot of money to Sheldon Whitehouse, like several thousand dollars on her professor's salary at Roger Williams. So I don't, you know, it's quite interesting there.
Yeah.
That's also interesting when you start digging into that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I, at the very least, right, why not just stay neutral? Just say, you know what? I'm just going to stay hands off on this one.
This is a bad look. Maybe I shouldn't
do it. Right. But I think it's so, they just don't care. They think, who cares? You know?
Well, they know, they have to know at least a certain percentage of their voters are voting for their label.
Right.
And what they do is not even entering into the equation for some of these voters.
Yeah. Now it's quite interesting. I was monitoring the comments on the poll that Bill had posted on the page.
Which by the way, was like what? 95% said it was unethical and 5% said it.
Yeah.
Even with them trying to, you know, storm the gates and change the numbers on the poll.
Right.
It was a blowout.
Right.
It was like 350 people to 15.
Right. And I believe there was a comment.
And it wasn't just an echo chamber, by the way. This poll went out everywhere.
That was the point I was going to get to. And someone was saying, I believe it was Glenn Donovan, it was Susan Donovan, District 69 rep husband was, you know, it's funny who jumps on these things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's the standard crowd, but, you know, something to the claim, well, this poll means nothing because it's only going on. Well, right. But when the poll started getting shared, you know, we shared it on our page, which I guess, that's the thing. We've got hardcore socialists that follow our page.
Right.
We battle them constantly.
Just to troll us. Yeah.
To troll us, right. But it went out on people's personal pages. It went out all over the place, right? The poll got shared a bunch and don't have the exact numbers, but it's, you know, it was well, you know, over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's absolutely.
Well, and something tells me that if you were to, and I kind of said this before with the progressives making this an issue, if it didn't involve them, seeing all these progressives come in to vote no on that, it was obviously a coordinated effort because you would think that they would, if they were answering honestly,
right,
that
they would be against.
It was just all of a sudden they're not concerned with money and politics.
No. Well, it's everything's a-okay.
Can you imagine the donor showing up to this? Who's going to be there? I mean, this is Gina Raimondo is the personification of.
Yeah, let me just pull up her actual invitation for this on Facebook.
She's the personification of money and politics.
Right.
She's spent her entire governorship running around collecting money
all over the country.
Yeah,
literally.
Like, so you can't stand here and claim to, you know, to be a rebel when Darth Vader is raising money for you.
Right. who's responded? It seems like I don't recognize any names off the bat, but interested.
Yeah, and I wonder how many of these progressive candidates are real progressives. Now, I don't think a real progressive is good either. But I think the people that the grassroots of the progressive movement should probably be aware of the fact that their candidates are being funded by the establishment. They're voting with the establishment. in the case of Jason Knight, he's voting with the speaker almost 99% of the time last session.
Right.
The grassroots of the progressive movement really needs to take a look at their candidates and realize we've got some people that are taking advantage of our momentum and that are trying to cast themselves as progressives when really they're, you know, they're friends of the establishment.
Yeah. No, it's speaking of Jason Knight, he was invited. He's got an invite. He hasn't responded yet. He hasn't RSVP'd. Although he's already donated, I think it was $500 to her. So,
oh, that was nice.
He's got another $500 to go before he clicks his, maxes out on his donations. He may have maxed out at that fundraiser that we don't know about yet. So, right. But yeah, the invitation list is a who's who. There's Jim Sevigny, who's a senator on the district over on the other side in Portsmouth area. Susan Donovan, of course, Teresa Tanzi. Yeah, you know, it's all the...
Susan Donovan's another one that votes with the speaker.
Right.
90% of the time.
You know, well, yeah, 90%. It's a little less than Jason.
Yeah, she was 93%. Yeah. I remember the number.
I wonder what her attendance... She might have been absent those days.
Saying it's only a few votes.
Yeah. One of my rep is on there. And interesting stuff. They did fix the typo, because originally the invitation said District 28 instead of 68. I'm like,
it's
unreal. So yeah. The argument being Secretary of State, that's what they do, but there's also other states that don't, they select their Secretary of State in different ways, right?
Right.
One way is there's a couple states, I think three states, that it's appointed by the legislature. So you've got a larger body of people that appoint the secretary.
Which is a little better.
A little bit better, yeah. Right? Although I guess, you have the entire electorate, either way. The governor appoints another one. The governor appoints, I think that's kind of shady myself, but yeah.
Either way, there's going to be opportunity for corruption.
Somebody said when we were chatting, I think they said, why not just make it a single term office? So the Secretary of State is never running for reelection, therefore never.
I think it was Eric
in charge of their. Okay. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's who I was talking with.
He's not even here.
He's impacting the podcast. Yeah. Right? So it's, that's another option is make it a one term seat. You know, maybe it's 4 years, maybe it's a little bit longer term, but one and done, you're done. Yeah. Right. And
you might have some success with that, but ultimately there's opportunities for corruption. And that's why I think the libertarian argument for limiting government so that it's not so lucrative to bribe it.
Yeah.
Is the real solution.
Yep.
You can pretend campaign finance is the biggest scam. You can bribe somebody under the table. You don't need to give a track donation to a politician to bribe them. You can give them cash.
Right.
You know, so you're not really doing anything. You're not doing anything to make that person incorruptible.
Yeah. As I often say, the problem is not the money; it's the power they yield and the influence they have is what attracts the money. You know, so that's the issue. Just to wrap it up a little bit on this. So another thought I had was the opposition or the responses that were thrown. It's nobody see all they see is the left right paradigm, right? They don't see any other solution outside of the way it is right now.
Right.
And that's where libertarians are fundamentally different. We think that there's better ideas than the ones that can be provided by government, right? And nobody seems to be able to wrap their mind around the idea that the only way that this can be done is with government, right?
Well, because the two sides that you're referencing there are both in control of the government. Mm-hmm. For them to come up with a solution that doesn't include them would not work in their favor.
That's right. And I find it sad that we've, as far as a society, we've come to the point where that's the only way we can solve problems. you know, the fact that people can't, you know, it's impossible for people to have ideas that solve problems outside of that.
Right.
And it's,
and when in reality, it's actually, you're actually more likely to solve the problem if the government's not involved.
Exactly.
Rhode Island is a perfect example of trying to fix everything using the government and, you know, trying to create yet another office to fix the problem or another bureaucrat. It's just not the answer. It's failing hard here.
Yeah.
It's really hard to, if you don't live here, it's really hard to describe how badly the Democrat agenda is destroying the state. Yep. Now think of the fact that progressives are, it's the Democrat agenda on steroids. It's going to escalate what is already an awful situation.
Yeah. And it's their ideas, but you know, times 10 with more government,
right? They think that the Democrats were right. They just didn't do it hard enough.
Right.
We didn't take enough money. We didn't, you know, create enough, you know, bureaucrats. We just have to try harder at this thing that it's the same. It's why they embrace socialism. This thing failed. It doesn't matter to us that it failed. We're just going to try it to a greater degree this time and maybe it'll work.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, socialism will work when you're voting for your own oppression. That'll fix it.
Right. Democratic socialism.
Yeah.
You put a democratic in front of it,
right,
and that'll be everything will be okay.
Mob rule socialism sounds great.
That's even better, right? Yeah. That fixes all your problems. So, all right. Well, it kind of brings us to an end here. And thanks for joining me. It was awesome.
Thanks for having me in. It was fun.
Yeah. Hopefully we can do it again. And
I'm kind of getting in my groove now.
I know. Yeah. It's a little awkward. Yeah. And like I said, before we started, you know, you just kind of got to get used to it. And even when we do breaks between podcasts for whatever life reasons, it's tough to get back into the groove, but it was awesome. I had a good time and thanks for coming.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. So that wraps it up. And I guess I get to fill Eric's shoes here. He usually closes this out, but as always, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. We're all on all the vast majority of the podcast networks. Facebook and Twitter is just look for Liberty RI, and you can email me at mike@libertyri.com. You can still email Eric, even though he's not here, at eric@libertyri.com. John, I don't think we have an email address for you, do we? Probably not. Shoot me an email and I'll forward it.
It was a few years ago. I haven't opened it in a while.
Shoot me an email and I'll forward it to John. So thanks for listening and talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.